Okay, I'm recording. So today's meeting is about career planning. There were two or three recordings that I highly recommended to you, and I hope you did watch them. The lecture by Kenneth Olden, which is the first thing. It's not terribly easy to listen to because he doesn't speak very, very clearly, and I hope you turned on the subtitling when on YouTube. It's I uploaded it as a private video, I don't think it's visible if you go to my account. It's just for you. When you turn on the subtitling, it's bearable. It's automatically generated subtitling. It's okay. You will definitely get an idea of what he was talking about. The history is the following. He was invited to one of the sessions of survival skills and ethics workshops. These were workshops that were very similar to this seminar. They happened once a month, a whole day, Saturday, from 9 to 5. And they were devoted exactly to issues like the ones that we are talking about. Although I have extended that to other also issues. He was one of the keynote speakers. He was invited by the organizer of the workshops. He is a successful scientist who has done a lot of good work, had very modest beginnings, came from a not very wealthy family in West Virginia. West Virginia is also known to be a backward state, not much industry, no big cities, rural with a lot of poor people. He has achieved a lot, and in this talk, which he's very honest in, I really appreciate that, he gave a lot of really useful, honest, frank advice that you will not normally hear from other people. Maybe from your advisor, but you will not hear it openly, you will not read about them. I found it really inspiring. In fact, I was there in the audience, then they shared the recording with me, then I digitized it, and I never had the time to actually put correct subtitling, but with YouTube, it's bearable, you can watch it. So that's already 30 years old. That's amazing. 30 years old. The issues that he talked about are absolutely still current and useful for young scientists. So what I want to do is just point out the things that I noted down from his lecture, the advice that I find useful. Not all of the advice I agree with, but I kind of agree with, but some of the advice I never followed. So I'll tell you which of them. This is, I think, very important. He said, you have to decide early on that you want to make something out of your life, that you want to make a difference to the society. Many people say that. I recently, a couple of years ago, my wife and I watched again the movies by Krzysztof Zanussi. These were movies that some of them were made in 1970s when I was a young man, younger than you probably. I was very impressed by them. I really liked him. He's a real intellectual with a capital I. And then I watched a couple of interviews with him. Amazing. A lot of good advice. He was also saying something similar, that sometimes people kind of wake up later in life and then realize that they have wasted a lot of time, that their life is not going anywhere interesting. And he doesn't mean, neither Olden means to have a career that leads you to Nobel Prize, but something more modest and kind of honest with you, make a difference. So that when you are on your deathbed, when you are approaching the end of your life, you can say to yourself, I made a difference. I educated some children. I invented something. I improved something. So otherwise, you know, life spent on things like consumption, it's not almost not worth living. So I definitely very, very much agree with him. Early on, you decide you want to achieve something. At your stage, you have probably made that decision already, at least certainly most of you, you want to do a doctorate. When you want to do a doctorate, typically in Poland, it means that you want to work at a university. Most of you will probably have that goal. You want to develop your career. Maybe you like teaching also, doing research. So he finds it very important. All of the people in the audience were young scientists. They were doctoral students and young faculty. I was a young faculty at that time. I think it's definitely very good advice. Decide early on that you want to make something out of your life. This is, he sounded a little like very concrete. While I agree with his advice, decide what is it that you want to become, and then I agree with, if you decide what you want to become, find out what will get you there. What are the steps? What are the next steps that you have to take? The only thing that I have definitely done less than he sounded, I don't know, maybe he just sounded that way. When I was, let's say, at your stage of development of your career, earlier actually, when I decided to do a doctorate, I already was committed. I want to become a scientist. I want to work at a university. That was already strong in me. But before that, I was definitely, my goals were not very concrete. Sometimes very concrete goals are not, sometimes you don't know yet, right? When you were younger, you may not have known exactly what you wanted. So become as concrete as you can, given your beliefs, your ideas. But the second part is very important. If you decide it, find out what will get you there. In your case, you just started your doctoral studies. You want to finish your doctorate in 4 years. Definitely, there is no reason for you to take longer. If it happens, it happens. But try to finish your doctorate in 4 years. That means that by the end of your third year, you should really be in the final stages of writing, of final experiments, writing, and so on. Which means that, if you move back, now, in your first year, you should definitely have identified a topic that you want to work. So these are the steps. Identify a topic, work, you can make intermediate steps, I want to have publications, 2-3 publications by my fourth year, good quality publications. So these are the things that you can decide about at this point. Once you have a doctorate, you should think about habilitacja in Poland. While it's still there, you should think about it. And then, professura. Find out what will get you there. To get that, you need to have a body of publications, probably good quality, for habilitacja, or write a monograph or a book or something of that sort. To become a professor, you need to have some, to produce some doctors. I guess you have to have some body of publications. You have to be able to demonstrate that you are outstanding in some respect, that you are exceptional. So this is what you want, and then find out how to get there. You can talk to different people. Different people have different ways of doing this. What you learn in the seminars, in addition to what I think, is I can also tell you what I did. That also is just one possible way of doing. Although I'm confident that if I talk to other people, they will have very similar experiences. We probably will agree on 80 or 90% of things. So if I talk to any of your advisors, I will be happy to, if you feel that the advisor disagrees strongly with what I'm teaching you, I'll be delighted to invite the advisor for coffee and then discuss this, learn something from the advisor. Maybe I'll change my mind also. He talks about vision. You need to know what you want, have a vision. Otherwise, he said, every destination will seem a success. And again, he sounds more concrete than I was always. I think the vision can be, I think it can be a little more vague. I want to be a good person. I want to be a good scientist. And good teacher also. These are some of the things that sound very vague, but I definitely had something like this. I make it concrete, of course, in concrete situations. So maybe he meant the same, but he just voiced it in a different way. Know what you want. So this is kind of repeating that thing that he says. He said, you need, that asks for a plan. If you want to have a vision, you want to know how to get there, you decide early, you need to definitely plan your career. Once you have a vision, and he said it also, you need to find out the route to the destination, including the intermediate points. The reason for that, and it's the same with planning your doctorate, it's a very big piece of work. Think back about the time that you were working on your master's thesis. You were facing a big task. It was very natural for you as a human to think, okay, I'm starting on Monday. Well, maybe next month, maybe next semester. That's very natural for people when we are facing a big task to postpone it. Once you start doing, it goes, but postponing it kind of, it's such a big task that I don't have the courage yet to start. So definitely start. And then finding the intermediate points helps a lot because then the task is smaller. I need to get there first. In case of doctorate, your intermediate points are definitely publications. So making your dissertation topic, well, maybe it's not yet very precise, but at this stage, this semester, you should already have, I think, a concrete idea for your first publication. I think it's time. If you don't have it yet, definitely spend time with your advisor to think about your first publication. And that's the concrete steps. And then think about, I need to have two or three such publications. Then, at some point, I will use the material from those publications, plus new ideas, new experiments, or whatever, and compose a dissertation out of these. If you don't know what the route is, how to get there, then talk to other people, but people who were there. It's better to, your colleagues, other students may know it too, but it's much safer to talk to your advisor, to talk to other faculty. If you find impressive people around you in your department, just stop by during their office hours and ask them very serious questions. Say, I want to become a professor 10 years from now. What do I do? You'll be amazed how willing they are going to be to talk about this. Because it's flattering to get a question like this. The question implies, I can see that you have achieved a lot. I want to be like you. Who wouldn't refuse to respond that question? It's a very flattering question. So people will talk with you and talk to other people. If you don't know, they will tell you how to get there, quite honestly, I think. If you don't know them personally, sometimes you can write books or things by other people. And there are definitely stories of other people. My advisor, Herb Simon, one of my two advisors, actually he wrote a book, a memoir, he called it Models of My Life, where he describes his life. I didn't need to talk to him how he achieved something, because I could read it in his book. So sometimes you can find it. And you don't need to know him, you can just get the book and read it. You can read books written by really very great people, Nobel Prize winners. I'm sure there's something about Maria Skłodowska-Curie. I think her daughter, I think she wrote a book about her. You can read that and see if there's anything that you learn from there. So definitely other people helps a lot. As I said, big tasks often are, this is from me, not from Alden, big tasks often we are overwhelmed by them. So my advice is to get started. Just if it's a big thing, get started. I may have told you that already. When I was a child, we used to write letters, real letters on paper. You may ask what it is, but it's difficult to start a letter. So what I did is I took an envelope, wrote the address, sender, recipient, put a stamp, and then I wrote, "Dear Christopher," comma, right? And then the rest would follow somehow, you know. So find a way of start, and then the rest will follow. Another advice that I got, this is also from me, not from Olden. This is the priest in the circle, Ksiądz Soszka. He died already, 2003. Quite young, I would think, 63 years. That's very young. I used to be an altar boy in my parish, so when the priests were visiting, they would often stay a little longer at my apartment where I lived. They knew my mother, they knew me. My mother would make tea and then offer some piece of cake or something, and then we would have a short conversation. They kind of felt maybe obliged to stay a little longer because they knew me from the church. So I remember when he was visiting us, I don't remember when it was, but I was still a child like that. He told me, he gave me good life advice. He told me, "Marek, you should always aim high. Because when you aim high, it's like a bullet. You know, there is a trajectory. It goes straight first, but then it kind of goes down. Like if you shoot a cannon or a bullet from a gun, it starts decreasing. So you should always aim higher. If you want to get there, you should aim a little higher so that it gets there." And he told me literally that, I remember. If you want to become a worker of the sanitation department in the city, śmieciarz in Polish, so garbage pickup man. If you want to become a garbage pickup man, aim to be the director of the garbage pickup company, he said. Literally, he said that. So that when your trajectory kind of starts going down, you will end up being the garbage pickup man. I took it really very seriously. I as a young boy, I was very serious. I took it seriously. So I was always aiming high. The problem with me was that I was also making sure that the trajectory wasn't going down. So I usually got where I wanted. But then it's very good that I aimed high. If something went wrong, I would still land quite high. I think it's a good advice. I definitely tell it to my sons, to my students. Aim high. Definitely good advice. This is the priest who was taking care of the altar boys. Actually, I'm going to see him next week. We are going to have the 50th anniversary of our high school graduation. So I'm going to see him. We're going to start with a mass in the morning. Okay, this is a picture that I found on the internet. Don't exaggerate with aiming high, because if you shoot very high, you can get the bullet in your head on the way back. There is an optimal trajectory. So I think isn't it 45 degrees? It gets the furthest if you shoot. So anyway, don't exaggerate with aiming high. Good ideas are often more effective than brute force. That's also mine, that's not all that. There is a TV series, American TV series that I watched. Somebody showed it to me and I liked watched a piece and then I wanted to see the whole thing. I have it on a DVD. If anyone wants to borrow it, I'll be happy to lend it to you or find it on the internet somewhere. The title of that series is The Man Who Built America. Late 19th century, it was mostly men who were, you know, doing things. Women in America, at least, they were taking care of the family mainly. Of course, times have changed, so take the title with a grain of salt, The Men Who Built America, The People Who Built America. It's about that industrial revolution that happened in America. late 19th century, a lot of things were happening, and a lot of people that were involved. This is Andrew Carnegie, a young man who emigrated to the United States with just a few dollars in his pocket. That's all he had, from Scotland, poor boy. He started working, started building his career. He was smart, learned fast. Somebody, a wealthier man, has noticed him, gave him employment, helped him to get additional education, to raise up. At some point, he became wealthy himself. He was always very warm about his mentor. It's a lifetime relationship. If you have good relationship with your advisor, it's also a lifetime relationship. Because you will have a feeling, I learned a lot from this person. I owe him or her my eternal gratitude. So he was actually grateful to that, I forgot the name of that guy. At some point he, I think it was Rockefeller or somebody else who destroyed his mentor. In terms of business. In any case, Carnegie then started a war with that person, a business war. He kind of took revenge, but he also became very, very wealthy. And Carnegie had a lot of good ideas, like when he started producing steel, he got into the emporium of his mentor. Steel was used in a very limited way, knives, maybe swords, spoons, forks, for cutlery, things that you use in your kitchen. What he did is he created demand for steel. How did he do it? Of course, in building. Steel has very good properties. It extends and contracts at the same pace as concrete. So you can reinforce concrete with steel. That's one direction that he went to. Another one was constructing things out of steel. You know, Eiffel Tower. That's a little bit, maybe later of that era. He figured out that he could build bridges out of steel. So the first bridge over the river Mississippi, it's a very, very wide river. There were no bridges, essentially. He built the first bridge over the river Mississippi, and he made it out of steel. The bridge looked to people so fragile, so delicate, that people were afraid to go on that bridge. It was made of steel. What he did is he borrowed an elephant from a circus, from a zoo or circus, and went with that elephant across the river on the bridge. And there is a belief, wide belief, that elephants will never go on a construction that is not stable. That's a belief. So when people saw the elephant crossing the river on his bridge, they started trusting it. Look at bridges these days. Most of them are made of steel. You want to build bridges, you need steel that gives demand, that is demand for steel. He could build his factories. He was also a very smart fellow. Very calculating. There was competition. So at that time, there were no anti-monopoly laws. I'm telling you those stories because these are inspiring stories of how can you build your career. He calculated how long he can have a war with a competitor. He reduced the prices of steel. He calculated that he will still survive, but that competitor will go bankrupt. When the competitor went bankrupt, he raised the prices of the steel and kind of cut back of what he lost. So he was quite ruthless, and he became probably the wealthiest man in the history of humanity. He was wealthier than Bill Gates and all the people that you can think of. When he's at some point at the age of 60, I think, this is Andrew Carnegie at your age, roughly, right? Would you invest in him? Well, there is something I have to say in his face that testifies he is a strong man. When he saw he reached 60 or 60 something, he decided that it's been enough making money. he should spend the money now. He should start spending the money. He sold all his businesses, all the steel mills. That was, by the way, in Pittsburgh. And he got, I think the sum was $460 million. But that's early 20th century. That's more than what Bill Gates has had. So at that point, he sold everything, and then he started spending the money. So he funded Carnegie Library just to do good for the society. Bought books people could borrow and read. He funded Carnegie Museum, Carnegie Hall in New York, a lot of things. He founded the Carnegie Foundation, a lot of good things for the society. So that's his career. But this is not what I wanted to talk about. Brute force. At some point, Carnegie, how old was he? 74, 12 years later, 39. He decided to he was still in the mood of making money, and he was quite ruthless. At that time, workers didn't have it very nicely. They made long hours. There were many accidents in steel mills, in processing steel. Many of them became handicapped, sick, many accidents because they were making long hours, so they were not rested, they were sleepy. They would, the lifetime was also not very long for them. In any case, he thought he wanted to make more money, so he went to Scotland. He bought a castle there, Skibo Castle, and he spent, I forgot how long, 1 or 2 years playing golf. And left in Pittsburgh Henry Clay Frick to take care of his business. That's Henry Clay Frick at the age of 25. Actually, no, this is not when it happened. I don't know when it happened. We could find it, but this is Frick at the age of 25. He left him, calling him the manager of his emporium, of his steel mills. Henry Clay Frick was ruthless. Still in Pittsburgh, he is remembered. There is a Frick Park. He probably bought a large piece of land and donated it to the city at some point. But he was ruthless. He did things like he looked at the local bank that they created in the companies for the workers. They created a bank where you could deposit your money, you got some interest. He looked at the bank accounts and how much the workers have saved. And he said, well, that's exactly how much, too much, we are paying them. So he reduced the salaries. Increased the working hours, reduced the salaries, ruthless, really ruthless. When there was a strike once, he hired a private police, a force of, I think, 50, 60 men, who killed many workers just to break the strike. This was the time when things like that could be done, I guess. They were never prosecuted, maybe there were some things, but this was his private property. He just ordered the workers to be removed from there. Ruthless. And the contrast with that is Henry Ford, again, showing up in that movie. That's Henry Ford at the age of 25. Would you invest in him? I can't say he looks like you, but he looks like any one of us, right, at that age. Henry Ford, a very interesting fellow, he had the idea to produce cars that are that are affordable for every American. So cars were very elitary, you know, only rich people could afford a car with a driver. You bought a car, you hired a driver, and they would drive you around if you needed. Ford had the idea that he could build cars for everybody in the country. That was also a revolution. Many problems, because in the beginning there were patents that the auto manufacturers would not yield, so they would not let him build a factory and build cars through the patents. He had a legal war that he won. The idea was there that this patent or this idea is so general that they couldn't prevent other people to build cars also. So he won it. But that's not the most important thing. He invented production line. you may have seen a comedy with Charlie Chaplin where he was screwing one screw at a time. The things were moving and he just did this and then at some point when he finished at 5 o'clock, he was doing this all the time, right? Because the whole day he was doing this. Production line, where everybody has a piece of work. You build a car, every worker has something assigned. One worker adds a wheel, another one the steering wheel, etc. So, a long line. At the same time, he decided that his workers would work only 8 hours a day. I think it was the beginning of the 8 hours day. 8 or 10, in any way, it was a revolutionary. Very short working day, and he paid them well. What happened? Even though he was paying the workers more, and they were working shorter hours, they were more efficient. And he was getting, effectively, much more out of the workers than the people who would do that brute force. So I'm telling you that story to essentially tell you this idea that good ideas are often more effective than brute force. When you decide to work and work hard, always don't forget to think also. Because it's, you know, ants are also busy. It's very important to know what you are busy about. Do the things that are important. So good ideas definitely always beat the brute force. That's the idea that I wanted to show you here. That's a nice quote from Henry Ford at a later age. Failure is the opportunity to begin again more intelligently. Persistence. Just a small failure is not a big deal. Do it again. Press it. Piłsudski, our important man in Poland, he said something like, you know, you can lose a battle, but it's more important, you know, the whole war. You can lose a battle, still win the war. Another thing about persistence. Look at that child. Because you too can own this phase of pure accomplishment. There is a nice book that I wanted to recommend you. It's translated into Polish, but it's originally in English, called Built to Last. It's a book that comes from a project at Harvard where the question that they asked, it was a research question. Those of you who are in the in our department of management, zarządzanie, probably appreciate this kind of questions. I mean, you work on different things, but some of you may work on this question. Questions like this. What is it that is common to companies that last for a long, long time, like 100 years? What is it that allows them to survive? Because the world changes. There's a war, there's another war, there's a crisis. So why did they survive and many other companies went bankrupt? So this was the question they asked. They analyzed, I think if I remember, around 30 companies. 10 or 15 of them were the companies that lasted for a long time. They were the IBM. IBM started in 1920s or 30s, I think so. Because they did it before the war, because they took part also in Holocaust, and they were producing the perforated cards for the computers. International business machines. Or Merck. Merck is a company that sells drugs. I mean, medicine, not drugs that you use. Other companies also. There are companies that just last and last and last. IBM almost went down in 1980, I think, around 1980. Everybody was waiting for their personal computer. They decided to go into the microcomputers. Oh, before that, Thomas J. Watson, one of the people who created IBM or was very important, I think it was a Mormon family, he said, the whole world needs maybe one or two or three computers. That was his idea. Of course, he was very wrong. In 1980, they decided to get into the microcomputer business. They created IBM PC. What we call today Windows machines, they all have the original IBM architecture. IBM created that machine. But the problem was that people started copying them and producing computers with the same architecture but not sold by IBM, cheaper. So that was a failure for IBM. Everybody thought IBM was going to go down. I worked for IBM, started working there in 1987. I worked for 1.5 years at Watson Center. It's the biggest research center of IBM. When I went there, there was like 1,600 scientists working in two buildings. Can you imagine? 1,600 scientists. That's more than our university and probably more than many universities in Poland also. In early 1990s, I stopped working. I went to do my doctorate because this was before the doctorate. Everybody thought they were going down. When I visited them a few years later, there were just 600 people working there. So they had to let go some people. But you know what? They came up again. Amazing. It was in 1990s. They started investing in data analysis. They came up again. It's amazing. So they asked the question, what is it that makes some of these companies survive and some companies go down and go bankrupt? Great book, not very big. You can read it. It's a good, nice, popular reading. The things that the authors say that are common to those visionary companies are principles, foundations. So there is like a mission statement, the basic principle when they created the company. What is it? When the times became hard, they essentially went back to the drawing board, to meeting. They talked about how can we solve the crisis using our principles. And this is exactly what happened with IBM, with Merck, with the other visionary companies. Merck, they gave a very nice example. I forgot many details, but you will read that. But after the Second World War, Japan was in big trouble economically. They were destroyed, humiliated. They had hunger even. At that time, humanity knew how to fight with polio. Polio is a it's a terrible disease. I think it's also polio in Polish, isn't it? Heine Medina, I think, isn't this the same thing? It's a terrible disease that makes people handicapped, especially when you get it as a child. Merck has offered their surplus vaccinations to Japan for free. At that time, it was 1946, 47. They just gave, because they had them in the magazines. The production wasn't terribly expensive. They just gave big load of that vaccinations to Japan. And the authors ask, guess which drug company is the most popular in Japan now? Japanese are grateful for that. That's also part of the vision. So vision. If you have foundations, principles, if you know what you want to do, if you know that you want to be ethical, that you want to do good science, that you want to achieve something, and every time there are troubles, you go to that principle, there is no way you can fail, essentially. You will succeed, like those companies. Troubles are guaranteed to come. That's part of life, guaranteed to come in personal and professional sense, everybody. Disease, troubles in your relationship, these are things that will come. But the principles are very important. That's mine, but it's consistent with what Alden is saying. He also advised to think big, like think about National Academy of Science, Nobel Prize, think big. Don't even think of not becoming a professor, full professor, granted by the president. So think big. Ask important questions. That's another thing. Because I remember from Simon, asking good questions, you work on important questions. The amount of work you need to put there is the same as if you work on a less important question. So it's definitely a better idea to ask important questions people will be interested in. Don't be afraid to ask important questions. Of course, there may be more competition there, which is not very good, but it's a good idea to ask. In fact, he advises to have a list of questions to answer, and then order them, sort them from the most to least important, and then work on the first three on the top. I wanted to say something. It will come back later. Don't hesitate to challenge accepted truths. He gives an example that one of the biggest discoveries he made was something about synthesis of some biochemicals in human body. The whole world thought that it was different. Why? Because a person who got Nobel Prize, when he was asked by somebody during his after his acceptance speech, he said, "I think this is the way it works," and he was wrong, actually. So it's really not a bad idea to challenge accepted truths. Just challenge them. Don't believe them necessarily. He stresses the need for a network of people. You need that to succeed. He gives absolutely several examples of how he was using network of people. He was saying, like, I knew who was important there in this institute. I was going to Washington, D.C., so I sent him an email or I called him saying, "I'm going to be in town. Would you like to have lunch?" And he said, "Well, I don't have anything to ask him of. You know, no special business, but I wanted to keep in touch with him just to say hi so that he knows my name." He also advocates something that I wasn't using, finding out who is the important person and make sure that they know who you are. That's I'm not that type of person, and generally I think that in your career, in your life also, you should do things that are natural for you. If you are not like him, don't do that. Because when we do things that are not natural, we look funny. It's just funny. He also warns that if you go to somebody and say, "Hi, I'm Dr. Alden," you are taking a risk. If you have something interesting to say, they will remember you from that interesting thing that you are saying. But if you have nothing interesting to say, and you know, you... They may remember you, but by thinking, "Oh, that guy, I know him." So it's always risky, he said. But you still should make sure that people, the movers and shakers, as he said, people who are important, know who you are. I have not done that because to me it's too much of this. They call it in English. Brown nosing. In Polish, it's wazeliniarstwo. Brown nosing, I guess, because you put your nose in, you know, from the back, trying to please somebody, I guess. It's too close. But there are people who, you know, they enter a room full of 200 people. Within 5 minutes, they know who is important and they talk to them. I haven't done that, I think. No, I didn't even done it. So if people, you know, I wasn't scared of doing this. I would talk to people, but not by all means. That important person has 5 or 10 people around him or her. I'm not going there. Yes, that's my attitude. But what he advocates is actually there is something to be said about positivity. I mean, it definitely important people need to know who you are somehow. Hopefully from good quality work, then it's a very stable thing. You are very stable then in your reputation. Don't arrive too soon. That's the advice in the American world and also maybe some other countries. In Poland, I wonder if this is advice that is important. You cannot arrive too soon, by the way, in Poland, because once you get your doctorate, you will become a faculty member. You will start working on your publications in order to get to the next stage, habilitatia. So it's not that important. In the US, when you become a professor, even right after getting a doctorate, it's not a title, it's a function at the university. You are very independent from the very, very beginning. So what he means probably is learn as much as you can before you become independent as a professor. So go to different places, learn as much as you can before you start doing things on your own. That's maybe a good advice. If you can afford it personally, I definitely advise you to finish your doctorate and then go to get a postdoc position somewhere in the world. So there are positions that where you can, where they can hire you right straight from your doctorate. The idea is that you go there to learn as much as possible. Your pay is not very high. They don't pay you a lot. It's enough, but not a lot. And you are almost like a trainee. You are a scientist. You are higher in the hierarchy than doctoral students, but you are still learning a lot. I think it's a good idea to do that. If you can afford it personally, by affording personally, I mean you don't have family, you don't have parents to care for that are around you. And you can do it. And you can do it. He gives examples. He was working for many years at Harvard with a very low pay, and he knew that he could not get a permanent position because they never hire, almost never hire permanently. But he was not worried about this. He was learning. You learn and learn and learn. Compare yourself to the best. That's another advice he gives. So don't think, okay, they are doing fine, well, let me do the same what they are doing. No, compare yourself to the very, very best, to the Nobel Prize winners, to the most successful people. He gives example of American car companies. I think he was talking about Mazda and Ford. Ford was trying to imitate Mazda and was also quite, is more successful than other American car companies. Pick your role models. That's, role models is very important. People who impress you, whom you can imitate. Why that? Because we as humans learn the easiest from other people. That's the reason. Plan. That's a good idea, I think. Plan 5 or 7 years ahead and then pause every year and recalibrate, adjust it to the circumstances. Don't take too many directions at the same time, so focus. This is an advice that I took it actually seriously in terms of getting money and projects. Some people work in the following way. The ministry gives money. I'm going to change my area a little bit in order to get that money to work on that project. Somebody else gives money, there is another grant that I can get. I'm also adjusting there and there and there and there. I took a different path, and I definitely advise that. That's consistent with what he said. Your direction should be your direction, where you are going. You can kind of decide, recalibrate. You do it because it's important. And then you are looking for money in your grants that are for that direction. So don't change your direction for the money, but find money that fund your direction. So as a scientist, you will need to get money, and then you have the choice. That's an important advice. Treat every job as a stepping stone. Never accept lower, less prestigious jobs. So always go to a more prestigious place if you change your jobs. Don't worry about a permanent appointment, because that will come naturally if you are doing good work. Vision. He talked about going where the things are going, not where they are now. So now, for example, you see there is a lot of work on artificial intelligence. I want to be there too. That's what is going where the action is happening now. But when you think about it, where is this going? Where will it be a few years from now? I want to be there. He refers to people, to playmakers. That's going to be in a moment. Playmakers, people who are rozgrywający. That's people who kind of anticipate in a game where the ball is going to be next. Don't follow the crowd. That's definitely an advice that I would give to everybody, regardless of whether they are scientists or not. Because that happens with investment. People are investing. I've heard of a guy who started buying silver a few months ago because silver was going up. That's a ridiculous idea. You buy when it's low, the price. When it was at the top, he was buying silver. Now it's already $200-$300 less than per kilogram than it used to be. Following the crowd, I remember when I was a child, I always liked fishing. I was at a lake in Poland, in the Lublin region, and there were that small fish there, kind of, you know, eating from the surface, uklejki, very, very small fish. And I was very inexperienced. I had a hook that was maybe smaller than my finger, but it was a big hook. How do you get that small fish to bite that big hook? Impossible. They will get to it, you know, to bite the bread of the hook, and then you have empty hook. The way to catch them was to create feeding frenzy. Feeding frenzy is when they see food and they don't think, they just grab that food. So I would throw a big piece of bread on the surface, there were many of those fish coming, then I would fish a smaller piece of bread with that hook, and I was able to catch the fish because the fish were not careful. They were just following the crowd. That is exactly what happens with humans. When we follow the crowd, everybody does it. So we too, me too, me too, me too. I try never to do that, and I advise you never to do it. Always stop and think, do I really want to do that? Have the courage to challenge things and change them. It's, I think, one of the scenes that in some societies, but I see that definitely in our university, I call it in Polish impossibilism, impossibility, you know, the way of thinking. No, I cannot change it. There's another one, tumivishism. I don't care, right? That's another of those scenes. I forgot what the third one. The third one was also one of those scenes. Have the courage. If you see something is wrong, if it's not working, then just do it. Just change it. Don't just say, okay, well, it's screwed up. I saw it also at the University of Pittsburgh, which was very, very different than Carnegie Mellon. A lot of people were also guilty to those scenes. Oh, you cannot change it. That's broken. You cannot change it. I think you can, and you have to have the courage to challenge things. Playmaker. Be perceived as a playmaker. Playmaker in games, team games, is the person who is, that's in Polish, rozgrywający. That's essentially, this person is responsible for deciding the strategy of attack, essentially. So if you are being perceived as a person like this, you are immediately in a better position than others. Because there are many people who are passive, and they will do whatever the surrounding will do. But you have to be active, and you have to create that perception that helps. That will help you a lot in your career. He was definitely advocating this. These are things that I kind of collected and added in addition to the talk. Some of the important ideas, I may have shown you some of these already. I should clean up and make sure that they don't repeat. I told you about this movie, Beautiful Mind, where John Nash is walking around and trying to find an ideal topic. He's doing it for a couple of years. He finds it, but he is an exception in finding it. So start doing something. Good topics will develop from there. Just waiting for this one topic that will make it, it's a little risky, it's an illusion. 4 years doctoral studies will not give you a doctorate. What will give you a doctorate is a few good ideas, a few publications that you will use to compose your dissertation. The dissertation will give you the doctorate, not courses, not exams, wherever you have to take exams, not being here. So definitely, it's less important to get good grades or, you know, to do the courses than doing the dissertation work. You should take courses only when they are useful for you. If you have a choice, take courses that will strengthen your research. Freedom of choice is an illusion. Did I talk about this? I may have already, yes? The moment you are in an environment, you essentially, the secret weapons are here, yes? It would be not very wise to do things that for which there is nobody working here, so nobody can help you. So in that sense, picking this university, this department, whatever department you are in, you have already limited your choices, and you'd better use the strong things of that environment where you're in. No TV, no newspapers, no news groups, web surfing, TikTok, and whatever else. These are all wasteful activities. We are going to talk a little about time management and stress. I'm going to come back to that idea of making a commitment and spending the quality time on important things. Role models are important. Avoid crowd mentality. Also, be careful whom you are following and who you are listening to. Some, you know, look at what people are saying. There are so many opinions, and there are wise opinions and stupid opinions. Definitely, my neighbor, I live in a village. Very good man. He is hardworking, good man. He has this flaw. Everybody has a flaw, of course. To always comment on something that I'm doing, you know. There are no trees between our properties. If I were different, I would have planted trees along the property, but I love people, so I like talking to him. Sometimes he gives me an advice that I didn't ask for, by the way, and he is surprised that I'm not following that advice. Well, that happens, right? So sometimes I tell him, he tells me, oh, you never listen to me. I say to him, well, some of the things that you are saying are wise, some of the things that you are saying are stupid. So, very direct, like he is. This, by the way, those of you who are from outside Podlasia, I read about this region, that people are more direct than in other parts of Poland, which is interesting. My family comes from a neighborhood of Radom. I grew up in Lublin, and I think that's maybe that's true. The people are more direct. Definitely my neighbor is very direct. If there is a problem, he will tell me direct, and I really like it in him. And there were a couple of times there was a problem, our fault. He told me about it straight. I accepted it immediately. I was actually thankful that he told me that some people would stop saying you hello tell you what the problem is. I really like it. In any case, some people, everybody actually, some things that they are saying is why some of the things are stupid. So be careful who you are listening to and what test also what they are saying to you. Get involved in research, definitely, as soon as possible. By now, I hope that all of you are already working hard on your first publication, if not finishing it already. But this summer, you should go to some conference and present your work. If not, there is a conference for doctoral students. You know it. It's going to be in June, I think. The deadline is sometime in May. If you don't have a publication yet, talk to your advisor. Don't do it on your own, but talk to your advisor and decide what to present and what to submit. It's going to be easier to get accepted than to other national or international conferences, and it's an opportunity. So definitely do at least this. This is not the case here because you are limited in this doctoral program. You cannot change easily the area. Some of your older colleagues did change, but it was a lot of headache, a lot of things. One of the students, they told him to repeat the whole first year, I think, because she changed the topic. It's difficult. So I would advise you to just stay within the area that you committed to, unless you find it's impossible to stay there. You don't like your advisor or whatever, then do something about it. But generally, don't jump around too much. If you are working outside, if you can afford it, because everybody has a different situation, consider not working outside and really focusing on your dissertation. I don't accept any students who are working outside. That's my policy, because I've done it a couple of times. It was a waste of time, essentially. It was very difficult for that student, so nothing came out of there. Of course, there are exceptions also, and sometimes there are situations where you have to work. You have elderly parents to take care of, or maybe a family. But if you can afford it, if you can afford living at a lower level, consider quitting work and then focusing completely on your research. Work hard. I told you already about the 10 years, 80 hours a week baseline, I think. It's very difficult to go around it, really. You need that time. Courses and exams are not that important here, so you are good at it, so. Oh, that's irrelevant to you, choosing an advisor, because you already have chosen an advisor. It's very difficult to change. But there are certain questions when you ask. Maybe these questions are when you are looking for a mentor, in addition to your advisor. I told you should look at other people also. And these are other things. Yeah, I'm going to just jump over it. It's not that important. But definitely, follow your current advisor. If the advisor is teaching classes in the area, consider taking those classes or at least sitting in, just so that you learn as much as possible. Oh, this is also different in Poland, because that's something that the advisor helps to compose the reviewers of your dissertation. But that is something that is decided by the department council and is approved. Your advisor will know what to do. The committee should be strong in the area of your proposed work so that they contribute something to your thesis. In most countries, you can talk to your thesis committee long before the defense. You can go chat, you can give them something to read, you can ask them advice. Not in Poland. In Poland, you submit your dissertation and then the reviewers are saying what they think about it. So that whole thing is really not working. So I'm jumping over this. Planning, we'll talk more about this in the context of time management. Find time for planning. Again, we'll talk more about this. Be careful who you are listening to. Role models are, they make things easier, because being first is not easy. And when you have somebody that you can talk to, you can just ask them, how did you do it? What would you advise? I have another short presentation that is related to the other talk that I recommended. If you find some time, definitely watch that talk. Here is another person that talks about how his career developed. Yes, okay. This is Randy Pausch. You can find, I send you the address, the YouTube address of the lecture. Randy Pausch. There is a lecture series in the Department of Computer Science, Carnegie Mellon, that they titled The Last Lecture. The idea there is, the name, is that when they find somebody who is worthy talking to the community, they usually invite people from outside who are really very good, very notable people. They tell them the following. Come, give us a title and an abstract, but pick the topic yourself. Deliver a lecture such as you would deliver when this was your, the last lecture in your life. That's the instruction. The idea is, again, that they, that people are trying to give a better overview of things. They try to be more honest, kind of an overview. Imagine that this is your last lecture in your life. In case of René Pausch, this was one of the last lectures in his life, because he was diagnosed with cancer. I forgot what it was. Pancreas, or one of those cancers that they give you a year to live, or maybe less, 6 months to live. You cannot live without that organ, and they couldn't do anything. So his lecture was really one of the last lectures in his life, 18 September 2007. He died less than a year later, more than they predicted. I think they said 6 months to him. So very inspiring lectures, very good subtitling, created by Carnegie Mellon, absolutely recommend it. Just a person telling about his successful career, very successful career. He died too young. Some of the things from his talk: dream, and don't be afraid to live your dream. He gave examples of that, of dreaming. In fact, I think he had a list of five dreams that he came up with when he was a child still. He also said, make sure that your children have a good childhood. That's he was saying about his own childhood and how thankful he was to his parents. On every photograph that he showed, he was smiling. There was not a single photograph where he would not be smiling. That was referring to the really important things that he talked about at the very end of the talk, which is his family and children. Here is a very important idea. We say it in Polish, głową muru nie przebijesz. In English, there is a concept of brick wall. A brick wall is some, you know, a place where, you know, you cannot go any further. It stops you. He said something very funny, very interesting. Brick walls are to test how badly you want something. I want to get to the other side of this wall. It's not going to stop me. If needed, I'll go around through the window, through the door, or break it or whatever, climb over it. It's for me to show to everybody how much I want something. I want to be there. So don't get stopped by this. It's a very important idea, I think. Just go and do something. Scientists work a lot. In his talk also, he mentions exactly this. When people ask him how to succeed, he says, if you want me to tell you how to succeed, see me in my office at 9 p.m. on Friday night. What he wanted to say is that he makes long hours, essentially. Hard work. You need something to motivate you. That occurs also in Simon's lectures and in his. Something that motivates you. I think also Alden, you can definitely hear it between the lines. Having a mentor is a good idea. And he gives an example of a mentor. He was ready to give all his students A grades, which is five, the highest, and after 1 month of the semester, he called the mentor, what do I do? The mentor told him, you would do them in disservice if you gave them all A's. The truth is that you don't know how far they can get. So tell them the following. It's very good what you did. It's impressive. But I know you can do better. Somebody who was experienced in guiding young people. Having a mentor is a good idea. You can go, ask, call to get advice. Therefore, a good relationship with your advisor, if it's good, because it happens sometimes that it's not good. That's, you know, bad luck for you. But if you have a good relationship, that is a relationship for life, for your professional life, definitely. For me, it's more than the professional life, but at least professional life is forever. You can always treat your advisor as an older colleague, a mentor. You need to learn how to deal with administrators. He gives examples of administrators who are bureaucrats, who are there to make our life more difficult. I remember when in living in communism, a colleague of mine, I was a student at that time, he told me the following. You know, it's much easier to understand what is going on in Poland if you make the following assumption. The government and all the offices are there to make your life more difficult. If you take this as an assumption, you will understand everything. It's going to be much easier to live. You know. Sometimes I feel that administrators in a university environment are also there to make your life difficult, to make sure that you follow the rules. You ask them, can I do something? No, you cannot do that. That's against the rules, etc., etc. That's ridiculous. My approach has been always, you do first and then you ask for permission later when it's successful. I created a lab. Apparently there is, definitely in Poland, there is a definition and there are regulations for creating a lab. So you cannot do that easily. In Pittsburgh it was not, I think, regulated, so I just created a lab. And the department chair asked me in the hallway, I saw that you created a lab, because we had web pages. I said, yes. That was the end of the conversation. You know, you do it, and then you ask later. Sometimes people are definitely more malicious in terms of helping you. That's my rule. Do first and then ask permission later. As long as you do it within, definitely what you do has to be ethical. That goes without saying. If you do something unethical, whether you ask permission, whether they give you permission or not, that's unethical, don't do it, ever. Because later you will be like most of the Germans administrating Poland during the Second World War. Well, we were just following orders, right? And they were killing people, torturing them, just following orders. So nothing unethical. But if you think that something is good, something is ethical, I would say do it first and then ask permission later if you expect any difficulties. Be generous with other people because you are never alone. That's, again, praising networking, creating friends, good colleagues and friends. Towards the end, he was talking about the really important things, his family and children. Because that was really one of the last talks that he gave, last lectures. So he said, make sure that your children and your family are happy. Because this is the best thing you can give them. And these are really important things. Acknowledge other people. We'll talk about it when we talk about writing. Definitely a good idea to be generous. Don't be an asshole. So don't be a difficult person, essentially. His advisor, when he was still an undergraduate student, he, in a good moment, good conversation, he told me, well, Randy, I have a feeling that people would, that you, your career would go much easier for you if you were nicer to other people, he said. And Randy Pausch says in this lecture, well, what a nice way. What a beautiful way to say to somebody that you are an asshole. But he took it seriously, and he learned it. Don't be an asshole. There was I was once in a retreat of a Franciscan monk. It was a very interesting retreat for men in the desert of New Mexico. And he told us the story that when he came to the monastery for the first time, he had a conversation with the chief monk in the monastery. So the chief monk told him, you know, brother Richard, you know, your duty in this monastery, most important duty is to be good to other monks, to love them, love your brothers. That's a Christian thing. And my personal advice, just, you know, personal advice, don't make it too difficult for the other brothers to love you. It was exactly the same idea. If you can, just be a nice person. If you can, work on it. He said also something that probably is true. If you give people enough time, they will show you their best side. So don't get impatient too quickly with people, with your people. don't be afraid of failing, otherwise you will never want to do anything, because everything that we do carries the risk of failure. He says that being a professor in the sense of function, not the title professor, once you finish your doctorate, you can work as a professor somewhere. So he said, being a professor is like having a cake and eating it. That's an English proverb saying, you cannot have a cake and eat it. What is a good saying in Polish that is has the same meaning? Literally, but is it popular saying that? Well, recently probably, because it's an influence of the English language. There's an old saying in Polish, albo Janek, albo Wianek. Do you know that? Some of you know it. That's exactly the same meaning, right? You either remain virtuous, which allows you to carry this flower thing during your wedding, or you get involved with Janek, right? You cannot have both at the same time. The same idea. So he says, well, being a professor is just having both at the same time. Learn to appreciate criticism, a very important thing. I may have talked about this already. If not, then I probably will. When people criticize you, actually you should be thankful to them that they criticize you. Of course, there is critique that is not constructive, like saying, you make no sense. That's a ridiculous critique, of course, right? But when you criticize, when you hear critique about something concrete that you can improve, then you should definitely be very thankful. When people don't criticize you, then it means that they've given up on you. They don't care about you anymore. There are things that are more important than career. And he says towards the end of the lecture, my wife and my children mean everything to me. They give the purpose of my life, and etc. So there are more important things than career. Every human being needs a successful career. Doesn't matter whether you are man, woman, where you live in the world. By the time we get older, we are about to die, we need to have that feeling that we've done something worth living. If you haven't figured that out, if you haven't felt it yet, maybe you are still too young, you will feel it. That, when you discover that you have not accomplished anything, you will feel like a failure. So we need that. It doesn't matter what it is. It can be bringing up four wonderful children. You don't have it doesn't have to be professional success, but it has to be something that makes you feel that you've accomplished something. And that's important. But even more important than that in life is to have this personal fulfillment also, which he talks about. He's done a lot of good things, had a lot of wonderful jobs in the world, but still, at the time that he thinks seriously about dying, he was preparing for dying, he found that his wife and children were even more important than everything else. It's a very good idea to realize that, I think. Planning, just like Alden said, find the time to plan. We'll talk more about this in the context of time management. It's definitely an advice that I give to everybody. Sit down and plan. Because if you don't plan, things are happening. But if you look at your calendar, what do I need to do next week? What do I need to do tomorrow? What do I need to accomplish this semester, this year, or this 4 years of my studies? That's incredibly helpful to kind of gives you the idea of where you are going. Be careful who you are listening to, because there are many opinions, and you as intelligent, well-educated people, the elite, not everybody with a doctorate is an elite. I've seen many idiots who have doctorate and who are professors even, many. But doctorate is noblesse oblige, you know, it's an obligation to you to be an elite. It's interesting that intelligence, education, and personal kind of culture, how would you say it, you know, the personal culture, really, these are sufficiently far from each other that we can talk about them in separation. You can be a very well-educated person, a professor, but behave, wisdom, for the fourth thing is wisdom even, but you can be stupid as a, what do they say it in English? You say it, dead as a doornail. I don't know what they say in English for being stupid. In Polish we used to say when I was a child, głupi jak but, z lewej nogi dodawaliśmy jeszcze. Stupid as a, like a shoe from the left foot. Education does not guarantee you wisdom. The same personal culture. I've known people who have not finished the elementary school, but they were delicate, very cultured, nice to be around. And I've seen professors also who are absolutely ruffians, both in their language as in the attitude. So these are different, but you should take care of all four. You are intelligent already, I know it. You will be well educated, you will get it also. Remember about personal culture and wisdom also. And be careful who you are listening to, what kind of role models you are picking. They make things easier. So that's all. We have still 5 minutes. I wonder, there's a third movie. I don't know if I sent you the link. It's the commencement address of Steve Jobs. Did I send it to you? Yeah, watch it also. Definitely like an inspiration, because you cannot, whatever you can say about Steve Jobs, you cannot say that he wasn't successful. Maybe in personal sense he was less, but in the business sense he was very successful. A visionary, really. So definitely, if you haven't watched those lectures, definitely find time for them. You'll find them inspiring. I tried to summarize the important things, but I'm, of course, these are the things that I noticed, but you may notice other things. Very good. Any questions?